You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, June 12th, 2015. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it's Casual Friday, folks. You know what that means. I am joined, as I am most Fridays, or at least those Fridays in which we are lucky, by Cliff Schechter. Also on the program, Matthew Film Guy will be joining us this week to give me movie suggestions, which I must say are becoming all the more important as one of my children is prepared to go to sleepaway camp for 2 weeks, meaning that I very well may have the opportunity to watch something. Also on the program today, as we speak, they are scurrying like little mice. Republicans trying to pass, trying to pass fast-track authority for the president, but they need the Democrats to vote for a trade assistance bill, which is part of that larger package. Nancy Pelosi advocating for voting for this TAA, which will essentially allow for the small number of votes the Democrats need to supply to pass the TPA. And it's all coming down today, ladies and gentlemen. Yesterday in the House, there was a rules vote. Cliff and I will talk about it more on the program today. Also, anticipate litigation, but the first attempt to stop net neutrality by the not-for-profit organizations who are paid by exclusively for-profit companies failed in a federal court yesterday. That's good news. We'll get to those other stories about Louisiana school children and et cetera, et cetera. But what we're going to do today to start off the program, oh, I should also tell you, we are releasing a couple of bonus shows today. Just trying something new on a Friday. It's a little bit of an experiment. It will mean no difference to you unless you wanted to. We've already released the conversation I had with film guy Matthew, right, about a WTF for non-members. We figure a couple of weeks later, it's not stale, but it's not as fresh as it was. But it's a bonus episode for you if you want it over the weekend. Also, we just released an interview I did for Ring of Fire Radio that's going to be playing this weekend on Ring of Fire. Some places it may be playing tonight with David Dayan. That will give you a real understanding as to why the President Obama has been so aggressive on this. And I will refer to David Dayan's interview, I'm sure, with Cliff when we talk about this. And then the third one's going to be a call of the week, call I had with a guy who first called in to harass Matt and Michael over the course of 2 days. And then Daddy came home, and that guy got in trouble. What's this? I just found a roach on the floor in the kitchen. Guys, I need you to sit down, and we need to talk about this. Do you know what a roach is? It's a short marijuana cigarette.
Okay, I was going to say, I hope you're being clear with our audience what kind of roach they're talking
about.
That's
what I'm talking about. I came home. If you guys had a party while I was gone, you're in big trouble.
When Dad's away, we like to
Sam's
got
to be there when we party.
We like to get a little lit and take calls from delusional, insane, quote-unquote
constitutionalists. Yeah, so we figure we're going to do a call of the week. It's just it's a bonus thing just to for folks. Also, Credo is still, we've got I think, 3 or 4 more days for the deal, for the Credo deal. Go to credomobile.com/majority to get that deal. You can always go to support our sponsors page on majority.fm. All right, we're going to do something a little bit interesting today. I'm going to call Nancy Pelosi on the air. It's not going to be actually Nancy Pelosi. We're just going to get their office and just register our wanting to vote on TAA. Part of it is my buddy made this, he has a company that does this, that I guess it's the prototype is out. It's called Fire RTC. He showed this to me last night, and I was like, what? I got to do this. You go to Fire RTC on either your Firefox browser or your Chrome browser. You sign up. It's beta testing, so they'll send you an invitation. He told me he'd do it within an hour today if they want. And it gives you like a telephone screen. Calls are free. I'm not quite sure if he's thought this out on how he's going to make money on this. But the calls are free. And he came into my apartment last night. He's like, watch this. And so I'm going to just type in the area, Pelosi. And before I even finish typing, they've inserted all the names of all the congresspeople and House and Senate. And District 12, it gives me her Washington number. I just click on it, and now I'm going to call it. And we're going to call Nancy Pelosi's office. Just register TAA. And that's it. We want a no vote. This is right. Is this a different?
I'm kind of clear.
I'm just calling from the Majority Report, which is a daily podcast, to just say that we're hoping that Congresswoman Pelosi pulls her support for the TAA.
Connect you to our press office. One moment, please.
Okay.
Oh. Press office.
Hi, it's Sam Cedar from the Majority Report, and we're live broadcasting our daily show online. And just wanted to call to say that our audience is hoping that then the Congresswoman pulls her support for the TAA.
Okay, no one's in the office. Do you want to leave a message?
Yeah, that would be are you not in the office?
No, I'm in the office, but the person you need to talk to is not here. Do you want to leave a message?
Oh, well, is it well, can you send the word to the Congresswoman Pelosi, or I guess
your name?
we could Sam Cedar.
What show are you with?
I'm sorry? The Majority Report and Ring of Fire Radio, I guess.
Do you have a question or something?
Oh, no. I just wanted to let her know that my audience really is hoping that she doesn't support the TAA because they understand that that is what is necessary to pass fast track authority, and they are vehemently against it.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. There you go.
Democracy in action.
Democracy in action. There you have it, folks. And so that was basically it. All right. We're going to take a quick break. You can use this at firertc.com. If you go and do a beta thing, by the time the show is over, you will be able to use it. And I don't know if there's actually a way to record your calls. I don't think there is, but that would be great. I don't know if they have that. All right. But good luck with it. And we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Cliff Schechter.
Easy, any man I wanna take and make him my mind.
Oh, yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. On the phone, ladies and gentlemen, is a man so prized, so cherished, that we can't even tell you how prized and cherished he is. We have to sing it.
Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC.com.
Hello, Cliff Schachter. How are you?
I'm doing well, Samuel Cedar. How are you?
I am doing well. Let's just get your sound levels corrected. So, Cliff, this is a pretty exciting day and perhaps the last exciting day of its ilk for 2 years. And that being there is a very consequential vote that is taking place today in the House where this is going to be the last major policy fight, it seems to me, for progressives until the next president.
Yeah, I think that's very accurate.
At least legislatively speaking, because this is the...
Well, yeah, that's the thing. There's other policies coming up. You and I have discussed overtime pay. There's other things that the president can do, and progressives are with him on these things. In fact, we've been pushing him. And I'm obviously pretty confident in a variety of those other measures will happen. But on this one, obviously, this is the last one legislatively, and ironically, we're back in the saddle again. It reminds me a little bit of sometimes during the first term when we are on the opposite side of the president on something, and reminds me a little bit of some of those budget negotiations and other things when we said, hey, you guys want some Social Security? So this is, you know, here we are, TPP, who knows what the hell is going to happen in the House? I mean, basically, most Democrats are not going to be voting in favor of this. John Boehner and Nancy Pelosi and Paul Ryan, and you know, whenever Paul Ryan's for something, it's generally very good for working people. They're the team trying to get the votes. On the Republican side, they need about 200 votes. They have enough. Obama is part of a UN conspiracy to take away our golf courses, people, that, they're voting against us, that I think in the end, Nancy Pelosi has to deliver about 17 or 18 votes. And so we've seen a trickle of a few people, Sam Farr, Kathleen Rice, both members of Congress, one from New York, one from California, who weren't sure what they're going to do, who have now joined Team TPP.
Oh, really?
Outsourced more of our jobs, but they still need more people. So it's going to be interesting. I guess it's the best I can say.
Well, all right. So let's just go through where exactly what has happened. I mean, and this week has been so difficult to sort of follow because people should understand, and you've got to help me out here a little bit better because you, I think, have a better knowledge of how this stuff works in the House. But when you start getting into rules and parliamentary procedure, particularly in the House, too, these things are not – these are sort of opaque unless you've actually worked there. And even people who work there seem to have a tough time sort of articulating what's going on. But essentially –
Well, just quickly, Sam, I do have to say I hate to disappoint you, but my entire time in this business has either been doing stuff like this with you or working as a consultant on campaigns. I've never actually worked on the Hill, so we may both be a little challenged.
All right, well, that's fine.
I mean, some of the things that go on there.
That's fine. I mean, I have people who are on the Hill and who are in advocates who will explain this stuff to me, and it's still I have a tough time grasping it. But essentially what happened was that there are multiple elements that have been sort of essentially lumped together, and in addition to the Trade Promotion Authority, there is this TAA, which is essentially a trade assistance for workers who have been displaced in industries because of trade deals, And
that's right.
And this is sort of the sweetener to get Democrats on board here. And it's not, they're not going to get many, but they're going to get some because of the TAA. So the Trade Promotion Authority can only pass, right, essentially, if the trade assistance package passes first. Now, here's
right,
the
now,
thing.
All the Republicans are going to vote against the trade assistance.
That's right.
Because they don't believe in helping people who don't have jobs. That's part of their raison d'etre, if you will. And that's where you get pro-trade Democrats who, while still being in favor of this thing, you know, which is bad, at least have something of a conscience in thinking that we should have TAA. So the strategy is, if progressive Democrats join conservative Republicans and vote against TAA, then that's going to put Democrats who are pro-trade, or pro-trade is not the right way of putting it, pro-this crappy trade bill would be the way of putting it, in a very difficult position, because then they would have to vote for this without the
cover
worker assistant.
Now,
a couple of these guys have even admitted that they can't do that. So
that's
that
right.
may be the way of taking this thing down.
That's exactly what the strategy is on the left. Now, apparently, to get the TAA out of committee, the Republicans basically said, okay, it has to be a revenue neutral. In other words, this can't be an expenditure to help people who've lost their jobs. It's or I should say, it can't
not.
Be a new
you can
expenditure.
Only do that with yacht has to tax be, breaks and things like that.
Well, it has to be balanced out, and it ended up coming from Medicare. And apparently, it did not occur to the Democratic leadership, and I'm talking about Pelosi and Steny Hoyer at all, that this would be a problem that would blow up in their face. And it did, because of, frankly...
Well, it never has before. I mean, it's not like right. the Republicans have ever run ads against Democrats based on
well,
this, right?
Yes, and
oh, wait,
people should
right.
know that Cliff yeah. is being facetious about 2010. So, left groups across the spectrum, AFL-CIO, the CWA, the unions, and you also had Credo was very big on this. I think the PCCC got in on this. DFA got into this, and they made the idea of the TAA cutting Medicare very toxic. And so apparently what happened was that Pelosi, trying to get to yes, even though she is supposedly has no position on the TPP that she's announced, trying to get to yes, made a deal where, and I don't even understand how this works, but it's an automatic kick-in. So when they vote for it, it supposedly would not include the cuts to Medicare, but these would slide back in later in the process after they've actually passed it. And so, and rightfully so, left the leaning groups called BS. Now, of course, understand what's going on here, folks, is that people aren't really arguing about the TAA. And David Dayen has had two great pieces that we were, like I said earlier in the program, we're releasing as a bonus content that I interviewed him about for Ring of Fire. And that's sort of where this stuff comes from in terms of within the Obama administration. But he has a piece out today that basically says, like, liberals have the opportunity to actually stop playing this game where I vote for cloture, but I vote against the bill. Everybody knows that support for the TAA means you are basically midwifing the fast track authority. And everybody knows that when you vote for fast track authority, you're midwifing not just the TPP and the TTIP and the trade services agreement, but any other agreement that President Rubio or Walker wants to push
right.
through.
So let me say something that I think is very important here as a part of this whole thing. I remember back certainly the first term of President Obama, when we were dealing with, the public option being traded away initially, and progressives said they would not vote for a bill without public option, and of course gave in, and I think Obamacare has done a lot of good. I think it would have done a lot more good with that. That's just one example. There are others of them. And I remember a lot of people on the left saying, you know, the problem here is we need a Tea Party in the left. Not mindless goons, like a Tea Party, but, you know, smart people who are willing here and there when they have to. I hate using this phrase, but I can't think of a better one, to shoot the hostage. And you know, and there was a lot of sort of hammering. Why won't Democrats hold other Democrats accountable? Why won't? And, you know, you've seen the cultural change. People talked about it with what Elizabeth Warren had to say on things and others, but Alan Grayson has called out other Democrats for being in favor of this thing. We've had people now willing to vote down the CAA, even if that as a way of stopping this thing. I mean, there really are some pretty amazing things going on if you look at it from that perspective. People did not just bow down to the president when he said, "Your facts are wrong. You don't know what you're talking about." A number of Democrats responded, "No, you don't know what you're talking about." Obviously, I don't like to believe in moral victories. But people who want there to be a strong progressive wing willing to stand up to the president of their own party if need be, willing to stand up to, willing to stand up on legislation that's important to them, you know, people really should sit there and say, this is right now the energy is in a different place than it was a couple of years ago.
Without a doubt. There's a deeper level of savvy. Now, part of it also is you're looking at a lame duck president. You know, Donna Edwards came out today and she said, do I look like a rubber stamp? We remember NAFTA 20 years ago. We're not stupid. The president has gone. I mean, I don't think maybe in the Affordable Care Act, we saw the president this aggressive in trying to pass this. And that is sort of the big question that everybody has. Like, why is he so aggressive on this? And let's address that for a minute. And I should tell you that this piece that David Dayan did, Michael Froman, the head of the U.S. Trade Agency, essentially, was part of Obama's transition team while working at Citigroup. So I don't know if you recall, but back in the day when the transition was happening, it looked like Robert Rubin was going to have a position in the Obama administration. But there was some scandal. For the life of me, I can't remember if it was about his taxes or just him. But Froman is a big Rubinite. And when that is clear, it becomes all of this begins to make more sense that it's sort of classic Obama. He still thinks these guys are the masters of the universe. This is very, very much the same reasons why he was hesitant in any way to do anything that was contrary to the interests of the bankers or the bankers' perception of what was to the interest of the United States is rolled up in this. I think that's a big part of it. I think another big part of it is that it's one of the few legislative accomplishments that he could have in his second term. And then there's the whole sort of geopolitical thing with China. So he's getting some measure of pressure from the national security establishment. Give me your sense. I mean, Cliff, this is pretty, I don't know. I think there's so much to learn about this. I think there's a couple of books to be written about just this little piece of legislation, this little era that we're living in.
Yeah, I think there's almost it's just a few books. I think one we need some novels. We need an all-encompassing book. I mean, no, I mean I couldn't agree more. There's so much that going on in so many different ways here. It's almost hard to wrap your hands around all of it. And you know, well, let me let you take it from here for a second.
All right. Well, I mean, I think like the interesting thing is going to be, and I think this is going to be very telling, because I think if the progressives, if the left part of the Democratic Party, to the extent that there is one, and can kill this, this is going to be quite big, I think.
All right. Let me jump. I want to apologize because that's the dangers of doing this show. From an undisclosed location, I'm somewhere sitting in my car and someone was beeping at me and I had to handle it, so I apologize for that.
I didn't realize. We should tell people Cliff is having some marital problems. He is now he's spending most of his time in his car. No, Cliff is on the road.
Don't start rumors. I'm so devoted to your show, Sandal.
I know.
Even though I had to drive to a different city for a lunch meeting, I still made sure to set aside time in my car, but apparently, I don't know if I'm parked somewhere I shouldn't be. I don't really care. I just needed that person to go away so I could concentrate.
All right. Go ahead. No problem. We may even cut that. Go ahead.
No, we're good. They're gone.
Okay.
I'm fine. Let's talk it. Maybe.
Well, I mean, I think it's very exciting. I mean, the thing's being debated right now, and it really is going to be interesting to see. I mean, there's so many cross currents here. Heritage Action is now scoring this vote, which is fascinating. Mark Levin has been arguing against this. And I just read something yesterday on the program. We were talking about this site, Obama Trade. And this Obama Trade is this site, apparently, and I don't know if this is accurate, but according to Red State and according to Free Beacon, was set up by a guy who was the maker of the movie King Korn, which I don't know if you remember that, but this is a guy who is...
Is that like the sequel to Who's the Caboose?
No, it is a great documentary, actually.
I'm kidding with you.
It's not. That's not inconceivable. I mean, that actually is probably closer. There's a closer truth there than you could possibly imagine, but I'm not going to get into that story. but it's a guy who they consider him a Democratic operative. I don't know if that's the case. A guy named Curtis Ellis. And he apparently worked on the congressional campaign of a guy named Jack Davis in New York.
In upstate New York.
Who ran as a Tea Party candidate and basically supposedly screwed up the race in allowing Democrat Kathy Hochul to win. And
right. He ran actually a few times. I think he ran once as a Democrat.
Yep.
But he was like virulently, that's not the right word, but he was extremely anti-NAFTA, anti-trade. And then he ran another time as a Tea Party guy. I'm not sure all of his positions were ones Democrats would like, but on trade, and I think, yes, you're making the good point there, which is we've seen this on auditing the Fed, and we've seen it on certain national security issues, which you were pointing out, and others, that there is, I think, that we're at a point now where even Republicans feel they have to talk about income inequality. I think some of the stuff, I want to see how it shakes out in the future, and maybe we won't know, because they may just transfer all of their race, some of these guys, their race fear hatred for Obama to their gender fear hatred for Hillary Clinton.
Right.
If she were the one to be elected. But let's say it was Bernie Sanders, it could easily be your anti-Semitic, anti-socialist, blah, blah, blah. I mean, the issue is who are the legitimate ones here? And that's the only thing I'm not sure. Who are the ones who are just against it because Obama's for it, or just against it because a Democrat in general is for it? And who are the people legitimately who are, people of the Tea Party right, who I would disagree with, hugely on a whole number of issues, but are legitimately anti-corporate control to the level we've seen it, and what will they do about that? Because the problem with some of these guys, they cry crony capitalism on the right, some of the Tea Party guys, and they say, Rand Paul comes to mind. What's your solution? Well, let's deregulate more. Well, that's a brilliant solution. That should help the problem. And that'll lead to exactly a worse situation than the one you're complaining about. So I'm interested to see their solutions. But it doesn't change the fact that there are some legitimate members here who are willing to join with Democrats to stop some of this kind of stuff. And it is. It's going to be very interesting times, because I think in our democracy, when we've seen the balance go too far, like we did over 100 years ago, in favor of corporate interests, interesting coalitions have come together to push back on that.
Right,
and we seem to be entering that period. We're in a period of time like that, obviously.
And from my perspective, I don't really care. I don't really care as to why certain people will vote in a way that will bring about outcomes that I'm interested in. At the end of the day,
I don't care to a point, Sam. But if we get a President Rubio, as you said, and suddenly. All the disagreement with trade suddenly disappears because it's Rubio doing it, or somebody, it's Jeb Bush doing
it. No. I'm not going to vote for Rubio under any circumstances, but I will certainly take, his vote or Rand Paul's vote or anybody's vote against legislation that I don't like.
I don't care the reasons, as long as they'll keep doing it. I don't care what their reasons
are. Indeed.
My only concern with them is how many of them are being honest. And if we did get a Republican president, how many of them would suddenly be born again, lovers of trade, war, the Patriot Act, and things of that sort?
75%, I would say. I would say 75%. I'd say it'd be Walter Jones would still be sitting over there alone, you know.
Still have Walter Jones. You might have, what's his name from Michigan? His name, Justin Amash, and a few others.
Right.
But yeah, it would be questionable. Let's put it that way. Who we can.
So folks will basically know. And yesterday there was a very close vote on the rules involved in this package. I think it passed by three or four votes in the House, which is also strange. But people understand that, like, look, you know, when you vote for these sort of predicates, if you will, you're ultimately voting for the end product. And I think that is what, on some level, it just seems like there is a higher level of sophistication now amongst the activist community to these type of things. You know,
And I'll say the one thing I'm sorry, I thought you were done.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say the one thing that will help us on the right, though, you know, which isn't always a good thing, of course, is that the establishment of the Republican Party has lost complete control. And so there's always the worry of being out crazy, as Eric Cantor was. And so even if they do lose a Democrat, you know, if it isn't about a Democratic president, let's say there's a Republican president, the one thing maybe we would have to help us is that there's always somebody who can claim they're further to the right and challenge you in a primary and spin conspiracy theories. And so we have that on our side, too. That might stop some of these guys and gals from voting for things like trade and Patriot Act and veto. And again, when I say trade, I'm talking about trade deals like this, not ones with countries with similar standards to us, but I think happen to be often good trade deals. The problem is when we do these ones.
Indeed.
And so we'll see. Interesting, Sam, I'll tell you that.
It's getting very interesting, and I'm just I'm looking at this. Wow, this is all right. There's a report. Now, President Obama went over to the House today in the last minute and literally this morning. And there's a piece up on Huffington Post that was updated 6 minutes ago. Ryan Grimm and a couple other reporters, Jennifer Bendry and Laura Baron Lopez. Wow. And here's a quote from Representative Peter DeFazio. Basically, the president tried to both guilt people and then impugn their integrity. Said Peter DeFazio, there were a number of us who were insulted by the approach. I mean, this is one of the problems that the president has at this point. It's like, you know, it's a little bit late in the day to go over and try and, like, well, I'm going to visit you guys. You know, at one point, people start going like, hey, and the only reason why you're over here is because you want something. You know, it's that sort of classic dynamic. You know, it's really funny. I mean, I'm getting a little bit off topic, but this morning I got into work late because I had to watch my daughter's present. I don't mean had to. I was excited to.
I was tied. I mean, yeah.
And but you know, I was a little worried because I was like, I'm going to get to work late, and so I had to work from home. But they were doing an abridged version of the musical 1776, which is all about, as far as I could tell, with these kids singing. Was who are we going to get to sign to write the Declaration of Independence? Because John Adams is such an obnoxious guy that everybody hates him, and he can't bring everybody to the table. So we got to get Virginia to do it. We got to get Jefferson, and they're all just singing about how John Adams is such a dick that nobody's going to want to sign on to this just because he's so obnoxious. And you know. It's amazing on some level, but because of course at that time when you start talking about politics, you're really only talking about a couple hundred people, right? And the idea of in 13 states, all these people show up. It's a couple hundred people. That's basically the entire political establishment at that time, and personalities are going to carry that much more weight. And I think we all assume on some level that. Okay, well, when you're talking about policies that are going to affect millions of people, and we're talking about billions of dollars, and we're talking about things that are going to impact us 30, 40, 50 years into the future, obviously it's not about personalities and whatnot. But, you know, this is the thing that has constantly shocked me since I've gotten more involved in politics and actually sort of,
oh God,
you know, is that
so much is about personalities, so much.
It's stunning. It's stunning.
I've seen it. I've seen it so often where personal pee can lead somebody. I mean, you know, look, a classic example, I think, was the point I made in the book I wrote on John McCain. You know, he became a born-again liberal in like from between about 2001 and 2003, 2004. He was co-sponsoring CAFE, you know, like the carbon emission standards for cars. He was co-sponsoring a patient's bill of rights. You know, he voted against Bush's tax cut and said it gave too much to the wealthy. I mean, the dude was with us with the exception, obviously a big exception of Iraq. But on domestic policy, he basically became a Democrat. And he did it because he was so pissed off at Karl Rove and George Bush. It had nothing to do with anything except for, and then of course, he became, at one point, was rated the most conservative Republican in about 2009. I'm serious, like more conservative than like those goofballs from Oklahoma and some of these other ones, because he was so mad at Obama, who he didn't think was up to his level and should have never beaten him, that he was against everything Obama was doing. And we're talking about just one person here, but if you don't think that extends to so many others there, and yeah, these are factors. And look, to President Obama, he always has had the sort of, he's always been considered a terrific and charismatic speaker on the stump, which he is. But the person stuff has always been questionable. He's never had those skills like someone like Bill Clinton has had. You know, cue joke here, which I won't make. And so that's made it more difficult for him. Even George W. Bush, from what I hear, when it came to person stuff, you know, was a backflapper and was able, people got along with him and often liked him. That's been a problem for Obama.
Well, I learned from...
He hasn't taken the time. He's come right out and said that like it's his least favorite thing to do, is to go to these events, which I think, I mean, he's done a lot of things that really aren't, people might take personally, and I don't think that's helped his cause.
Well, let me read you a quote from this piece here, because this is really interesting, and it speaks to the sort of the dynamic that's going on right now. Peter DeFazio from Oregon came in and said, the president tried to both guilt people and then impugn their integrity. There was a number of us who were insulted by the approach. And you can see this in the reporting. I've seen a couple other characterizations of what the president said. And it goes to what we were just talking about, the relationship between the TAA and the TPA. The TAA, again, is the Trade Adjustment Assistance, which is money basically given to workers who have been displaced because of the trade deal. The TPA is the Trade Promotion Authority. That's the fast track. So here's I'm reading for the piece. DeFazio was one of a number of Democrats who left the meeting saying Obama's message was off key. They said he repeatedly used the phrase, play it straight, in making his pitch. And this is what he meant. If you oppose the TPA, vote against the TPA. If you support the TPA, vote for it. But if you've supported TAA in the past, that Trade Adjustment Assistance in the past, because they've had it for other bills, and will again in the future, don't oppose it now just to sink the entire trade deal. Now, this is basically treating these guys like, see, this is where it's really important when constituents call in and say, don't vote for the TAA because I know it's a way of passing the TPA. The Congress people realize that their constituents understand what's going on here. The president, in talking to them this way, basically says, like, you know, even though you know this is going to bring about a bad outcome, just vote for the narrow thing here. And that is a little bit insulting because it's basically saying, like,
it is, yeah.
I don't care about what your constituents know about what you're doing. In some respect.
Right. Well, I mean, look, this may be because we're at the end of, you know, this is the last big policy fight, and people know that Obama, you know, the president's on the way out, and we'll have a new president. Or it may just be that, you know, some of these personality dynamics are, let's face it, it could be both. But you're seeing a lot of this stuff. You saw Sherrod Brown hit President Obama about a month ago, and he's obviously been a leader before Elizabeth Warren got there. He's been the most anti-trade Democrat probably for a long time.
Yep.
Or anti, you know, this kind of bad trade deal, let's put it that way again. You know, Rosa DeLauro, who's been, and Jen Schakowsky, who's both progressives, Schakowsky, an early endorser of Obama, have both been very vocal in attacking this trade deal in a way that has almost personalized it in a manner that I wouldn't expect in the past. You've got DFA, you know, and Howard Dean, primary Democrats who vote for this. You've got Labor threatening the primary Democrats who vote for this. Some of it's about their issues, but I have to believe some of it's also about the president. You know, I mean, let's be honest. And whether it may just be that they feel, okay, he can't do anything to us, he's on the way out. But it may also be that, you know, he's on the way out. But, you know, this is that we couldn't do this before when you didn't stand for the public option. You kind of told us to get lost. We couldn't do this before when you chucked card check and didn't do that. We couldn't do this before, you know, on stimulus. But now you're towards the end of your term, and payback is going to be a little bit tough, you know? I don't know. I think all those dynamics are floating around here.
It's interesting. At the end of this this piece, there is really indication that and the vote for the TAA is scheduled this afternoon, that this may not be able to pull it out, and this would be just fantastic. I mean, certainly unexpected by a lot of prognosticators just even a month or two ago. And this is, you know, I mean,
well,
I want
to
get
about what's been happening. I mean, so much stuff. Do we think that Elizabeth Warren would be able to take down, you know, someone that they were trying to put in the Treasury Department, right? Or Larry Summers, when they're trying to bring him back, you know, get the band back together. I mean, one thing after another, a lot of things, and we've lost some of them, but it's been a fight. You know what I mean? I mean, and people were like, yeah, Bernie Sanders, nothing will happen. Look what's happening. I'm just making a point that there's a lot, you know, even a case of, in you know, I don't know how closely you follow, and maybe you've talked about this or maybe not, you know, state legislatures, but there's a race in Virginia, a state delegate race, where in a relatively progressive district, this Tea Party Democrat, again, like that guy we were talking about earlier, a Democrat who's endorsed by the Tea Party, who's more conservative than all but about five or six Republicans in there, who's, you know, to the consternation of Democrats, has represented this district now for a while, and he just got smoked the other day by a progressive Democrat who challenged him in a primary. I mean, times, they are changing, you know, and this is a part of that.
I'm not going
to changing in the direction we've wanted it to, and that's always been the key factor, is not every individual fight, but that those fights took place, that you didn't make it easy anymore, that sometimes you win, but if you lose going down with a fight and being tough. And you know, we're seeing the results of that now.
Yeah.
Because every step emboldens activists, legislators, you know, the unions, other people that much more. So,
all right, well, let's,
it is fascinating times.
Let's take just a minute or two and project into the future in the event that this fails, because, or I should say, the left pushback succeeds here, okay? And this may be inopportune, but I don't believe in magical thinking, so I'm not counting chickens here. I'm just, you know, this is what you and I, this is what we enjoy doing. Last night I tweeted out.
I don't know why. I don't know what it says about us, but yes.
Last night I tweeted out about this phone service embedded in your browser that a buddy of mine had developed, that I could just put my name in. I just called Nancy Pelosi at the beginning of the show. You can just put in a name of a congressperson or a senator, and it will pull up the number. You dial directly into them. And I tweeted out, like, this is cool. Check out this thing. And a comedian who I'm friends with and works on Marin's show, wrote back, like, Sam, I think you have really lost touch of what the word cool means. And it's just, so this is the type of stuff that, like, it gets you and I excited, as sort of maybe embarrassing as that should be. But all right,
you're a long way from your days on Sex and the City.
I know, it's true. It's true. It's the small things that bring me sort of joy and excitement these days. Like, you know, hey, I got an extra pickle at the deli today. That was great. that can carry me through like 3 weeks. All right, but
yeah,
let's assume for a moment that the TAA goes down. That means that I don't even know if they bring up a vote, frankly, on the TPA at that point. And then, for all intents and purposes, this becomes a dead letter, I think, until the next president gets into office, because you start getting into we get into the election season. We are only now, I will tell people, less than 2 months away from the first Republican primary debate. And so
right here in Ohio, baby.
There you go. And
I will be.
There could be two, yeah, for all we know at this point, back to back.
It's almost like they should just flip coins and see who ends up in which division. Maybe they should just sort of the winners of each play each other like a playoff. I don't know. It'll be fun.
I'll tell you something. If Fox was smart, they would do that. They would do it like it was a lottery. They'd put like a bunch of ping pong balls with the names of the candidates, put it in one of those like, you know, bingo things and just pull it out in heat number one and heat number two. But
I think MSNBC, what they should do is just invite like the 10 worst.
The RNC, like, I agree with that. In fact,
we would like there to
I
be
sent
one
an email to
Ted
them
Cruz,
about that.
George Pataki.
I sent an email into them about that, but I have a feeling the RNC has a rule like they will bar you from future debates if you do something like that.
Like if you invite George Pataki.
You know what? I heard Pataki may be dropping out of the race because his son just got
ill.
That's
true. You know, I may be pulling a Ted Cruz here on Biden. I shouldn't do that because I do feel bad for the guy and what happened. I saw that briefly last night.
I haven't read about that.
My apologies to the Pataki family.
Well,
that's a real tragedy.
Yes. It would be a bigger tragedy if his son didn't have health insurance, which... you know, the one opportunity I had to ever talk to Pataki in person, he poo-pooed how important that was. So, yes, I feel
good
bad.
Point.
I feel bad for the son. I feel or son-in-law. I feel bad for the family. But I
we
still
feel
find,
worse for people that have serious problems and don't have health insurance.
Yeah, I still feel Pataki is an odious person. All right, but be that as it may, let's just take a moment here for and okay. So assuming this fails, the president is left with no opportunity for any major legislative accomplishment. That doesn't mean there's no opportunity for any major policy accomplishments, but it seems to me it would put more pressure on him to do even more from in terms of executive authority. I mean, I'm convinced the reason why we had that rash of stuff that happened, right, from November, really,
right,
into like January, maybe February, and then nothing. And I think they've been laying low in the White House because they wanted to get this through. I think if it doesn't get through, it's going to push him even to do even more from an executive standpoint, because he's got to do more to create that legacy going forward. And so I think this is all... Not only I think is it good and great, actually, to stop this trade promotion authority and these so-called trade deals, but I think the fallout will also be that much better, too.
I agree about 1,000% with that.
That's what I'm always looking for.
It'll be interesting to see the way the president handles it. My hope is that, assuming this, because you know, we can't get any more legislation passed, He'll grab some more of these executive actions, really almost just to annoy Republicans. And you know, I would actually appoint maybe like 50 different czars with no particular, you know, czar of leaves, you know, stuff like that, just to see how they react. But no, I mean, more seriousness, like, what are you doing with overtime? There are a number of other things he can do.
I say full-on czar of Sharia.
Oh, that would be great. Put those two words together in a sentence, like half these people would be, they wouldn't be able to understand that.
Yes.
And they'd freak out.
It would be
there's like foreign words in there.
That's bad. Well, Cliff.
And then Glenn Beck could draw a chart for us where, of course, it would end up somewhere around Adolf Hitler.
There you go.
Because that's generally, you know, that's what he does.
This is how it starts.
He's a good man that way.
So, Cliff, I know we wanted to talk about Mark Kirk's bro without a hoe comment. And Jeb Bush.
Yeah, that was bad.
Jeb Bush, you know, you're already starting to hear like the type of dissension this is what brought down Hillary Clinton right around this time. It's like all the dissension in the campaign. You're already starting to hear some of the backstabbing and of the questioning, and they're trying to soften the blow. They didn't raise as much money as he thought, and they're saying that he's looking lacking.
Jeb Bush is just a terrible candidate who's going nowhere, which I've been saying since day one.
Yep.
And I don't care. You know, the establishment wants to get behind somebody. They need to get behind somebody who has something dynamic about them, has something likable about them. I'm not saying they're my cups of tea, but, you know, someone like Marco Rubio, he scares me more. You know, Jeb Bush has no talent, and he's got the albatross around his neck of his family name, his brother's presidency, that's where, you know, his wealthy background.
you know, and you can overcome that with some charisma and some charm, things that Jeb Bush doesn't possess. And so he at this point, Rubio's caught up with him in Florida, you know, in Republican polls of Republicans in Florida, Rubio has caught him. He's just, you know, they're on the issue to see who they jump to. If it's Scott Walker, Marco Rubio, player to be named later, I'm not thinking about, you know, we'll see.
Well, but this is the time where guys like you and I go out and get Rubio is a Manchurian candidate.com. And start claiming that he's secretly going in to open our borders. That's his plan.
Don't do that. Grab that because I'm in the car right now and I can't.
we had meant to talk about how the Koch brothers now have basically. There's, you know this from your campaign work, that the one thing you look from the party is for the sort of the master voter list, where supposedly all the best tech and all the best experience has sort of filtered it down to where you have this list where you can tell where you should spend your dollars, your time, your volunteers, et cetera. And apparently the Koch brothers have a better list than the RNC at this point. And the RNC.
Well, they were sharing stuff, and the Koch brothers have grabbed the list apparently away from them.
Yes.
And culled it already and are not sharing their culling with them, which I just think is beautiful because, you know, it's great when the Koch brothers, much like the Tea Party, like Fox News, who used to have the same interests of the Republican Party, but who's now completely divergent interests because what entertains more tends to not get elected, get people elected. And now the Koch brothers, too. And all these monsters they create end up splitting from them and leading to their own demise.
Indeed.
Kind of makes me happy, I've got to be honest with you.
Well, Cliff, that's how I want to leave you. I always want to leave you happy. Thank you so much for endangering your life and the life of others on the road by doing this while you're in your car. And
I do what I can. And then, look, Sam, as a New Yorker, anytime I get behind the wheel, it's endangering others.
I know. So. I have no doubt of that. All right, Cliffy, we'll talk to you next week.
Take care.
Thanks, buddy. Hey, remember, folks, this program is being sponsored just for a couple more days by CredoMobile.com. The Credo deal is going to go away soon. Go to CredoMobile.com/majority report. And get that deal. You can also call 800-966-1665. Use the offer code 501-882. 501-882. You get $100 off any phone, 25% off your first year's data. If you got an existing contract, they'll buy you out of it or give you a credit, I should say, on your Credo bill up to $350. They have a program where you can trade in your phone and get up to $300 on your phones. It is, it's great stuff. And Credo, you know, like I say, if this TAA goes down, they're a big part of that. They're a big part of it. And so, when you make your calls or you text your texts or whatever it is, your kid grabs your phone and downloads all these apps and, you know, runs your battery down and takes up all the space because she's shooting videos of, she's doing fake duct tape wallet tutorials. You can at least feel good that it's going towards progressive issues. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Film Guy Matthew.
Amen.
All right, we are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone, ladies and gentlemen. It's not Ford Nile. I'm using that FireRTC.com phone service. Let's see how it sounds. But first, before we can do anything, ladies and gentlemen, we can't have this guy on without playing this song. And a fair warning, this is this song rocks out, as the kids say. So back off your speakers right now.
Let's rock.
Matthew, the film guy, is choosing your streams. Cassavetes on Netflix and other such themes. Maybe you'll watch one and learn a few things. Please recommend me a movie to stream. Matthew, please recommend me a movie to stream. Matthew, film guy.
Oh, I don't know if I remember that last film guy. Hello, Matthew, film guy.
Hello, Sam Cedar. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Now, last time you were on this program, if I remember correctly, you suggested Ratcatcher.
Yes, that's right. Exactly. Lynn Ramsey's Ratcatcher, debut feature film.
And I did not watch it. But
not surprising.
No, I know it's not surprising, but I don't know if you heard the sad news that my daughter will be gone for 2 weeks for going to camp, sleepaway camp. I'm actually...
Oh, Tara, you must be so broken up.
I got to tell you, I'm actually a little bit nervous about it. I don't know if I can handle it. Nikki and I have not been away, both of us, from our daughter for more than... I think 48 hours. That was the longest period of time that we've ever been away from it, and that only happened once. You know, she'll go to sleepovers at other people's houses. One time, both our parents don't live anywhere near us, so I think it was maybe in the summer of, 10 years ago, when our 5-year anniversary, our moms came and took care of Mila for like 2 nights. So I'm a little bit concerned that she's been away. But from what people tell me, it's really hard the first 36 hours. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, my God, this is great. Now, I don't believe those people if Mila's listening. But if she's not, then I do believe them.
Right. But you're going to have a lot of time to catch up on all the movies over the years I've recommended that you just haven't had time to get to, right?
Well, at the very least, Ratcatcher, I'm going to definitely watch that one.
Okay. And I got another one for you today, so you never know.
All right. Well, we will talk about that. I should also tell you that we're releasing on our stream the conversation you and I had about my appearance on Marin's WTF. So you should just know that.
Okay, I'll be ready for the onslaught of fame and notoriety that is about to come
my way. Yes, you're going
to
get buried, buddy. So just I wanted to prepare you. You may
All
want
right,
to
say goodbye to normalcy. I'll get ready.
It's been very difficult for me. Just walking around.
I understand.
Yeah, very tricky.
Yeah.
So what else have you
very
been
well.
Doing, Matthew? What have you been doing since the last time we spoke?
I've been doing my thing, you know. I'm teaching all my classes, doing all of my Langdon Boom Productions video work, some more exciting than others. Right now I'm possibly being considered for a job that I can't talk about yet, but if I get, would be very exciting.
Really?
And, I do hope that will sate you for just a little teaser, but maybe in a couple weeks I'll have something more to tell you. But in the meantime, I'm enjoying speaking to sprightly, inquisitive senior citizens about world cinema. And I'm selling things on eBay.
I was going to say, let's talk about that, because we haven't been you were on.
I know I sort of started a trend.
Well, now look, and I want to, before we do this, okay, because I don't want this to turn into something where it's like sort of like a joke, but it also ends up making you a lot of money. That's the last
thing.
Well, because if we do anything like that, I want to figure out a way of getting in on it.
Okay, that's fair.
All right.
But you realize the funds are coming from people who want to cut you out of the loop. So if they know that I'm cutting you back into the loop, it may defeat its own purpose.
All right. Well, we don't. Wow. So now you're telling me that not only is it are you being spiteful, but there's a whole community of people out there who are just going to get you wealthy just to spite me.
I think that's the sort of the fun of the joke is to, you know, cut you out and see how much more they can give me for a DVD that has actually been available on your site for many years.
I got to tell you, I got to say that sounds like
Sounds like your audience to me.
I mean, that sounds a little bit. I don't know. That sounds like you're just trying to, gin up more juice for your eBay thing. I don't know. It's very difficult.
I'm beating the bushes for all the spiteful people. The fact is, I'm basically out of stuff connected to you to sell. I'm not going to sell my last copies of Bad Situationist or Who's the Caboose or the People versus RNC DVDs. I'm going to hold on to those. So I'm out of stock. So if anyone wants to spite you, they'll have to find some other way to do it.
All right, good enough. So last time you were on, you were selling a copy of A Bad Situationist, which you did the final editing on, much of the editing,
that's right.
Frankly.
That's right.
And that was basically because...
And put together the DVD extras, all the different extras that we spent all that time putting together, all that great stuff.
That movie was a crazy time. We never even used all that... what was that? The sort of what do you call that? Spy cam footage.
Oh yeah, the spy cam stuff. Yeah, that was a lot of you and me stuff. That was fun to do. We never really included that first intellectual salon where all the people were there, including Stephen Colbert. So that's in the extras.
That's right. Colbert's in the extras, just briefly.
Yeah, I don't know why we're doing the infomercial now. I'm out of stock. Like I said, I'm out of stock. So.
Well, I was just looking. I don't know why I was recalling that, but I had this very nice apartment that sitcoms had bought me, and I was putting up. I lived in it for 3 weeks with all the windows blacked out. And all of my furniture in the bedroom where Nikki and I lived, because her apartment we were using as basically a place for the DP to live. And for a long time, I was building a big round table that looked like Charlie Rose's table in the apartment with a circular saw and I think a jigsaw. It was
It looked good. You were very proud of that too. Very proud.
I was very proud.
You should have been.
I was very proud
about it. My favorite part is that you had to sneak all the equipment and all the construction in and out of the building without your co-op board finding out. That was the most fun, I think.
And then, to make matters worse, on day two of the shoot, they installed, or 2 days before the shoot started, they installed security cameras in the elevators.
Right.
Do you remember that? That caused a huge consternation. But all right.
I remember having those seem like I was just coming to visit you when I was carrying equipment.
The point is, last week you announced that you had a copy of A Bad Situationist on eBay, and then I got like a series of emails from you over the next couple of days giving me an update on how you were getting literally $30 or $40 more than I am selling it myself for.
Yeah. I believe it topped out at $47, with the promise of autographing, which I wound up doing, to a lucky listener who lives in Knoxville, Tennessee. So, you know, it's just spreading the good cheer.
People pay more for Matthew Film Guy's autograph than for Sam Cedar's.
It's unbelievable.
I don't know. You haven't tried selling your signature, so we'll have to see what the market bears. You know,
I stand outside of all the Comic-Cons, and I set up my own booth, but nobody comes by.
Oh, man, that's too bad. That's really too bad. I'd pay at least $10.
All right. Well, I'm going to hold you to that.
Okay.
I'm going to hold you. Now you're feeling a little awkward about it, right? And
I did. I really do. I never thought it would be that high. I never even thought it would be an actual sale. You know, I had it on sale for weeks and weeks at $9.99, and nobody bit. And then suddenly... Wow, $47.
Here's what I would recommend. Next time you put anything else on eBay, you call into just other radio shows. And
yeah, I think I'll do that.
You just call in and like call into like some type of sports talk show, and you just say like, I got to tell you,
I think the Yankees are doing great, and I can see it because I'm selling a one of a kind Yankees cup on eBay that people should check.
I actually do. I have a 2002 free seat map of Yankee Stadium that they handed out one time when I was at the game. That's on my eBay list. So yeah, maybe that's exactly what I'll do.
So what do you do? You make a list of things that you're going to put on eBay?
Yeah, I basically just look around the house. Is there anything that really has outlived its usefulness? Have I not touched it in over a year? Is it nothing any particularly sentimental value to me? And I do my most minimal market research by doing a search on eBay to see if anybody's already sold one, and then I list it. You know, some things lay fallow for a very long time, and then some things go right away. So sometimes you're surprised. You never know. But it's mostly like a way of spring cleaning. You know, I can't just throw this stuff away. It's like recycling. Sometimes you only get $1 or $2 after the shipping and stuff, but I just feel like as long as somebody else is getting some pleasure out of this thing, it's not being wasted. So it's, I don't know, it's like a internet sales OCD kind of thing, or hoarding, but just at somebody else's house. You know, I can't really throw it away. So this is a way to make it psychologically palatable for me to get rid of stuff.
Well, guess what you just did? You just gave Noah, our new intern, basically a job. Noah's actually sitting.
Oh, man, I've been in that office. Look around. That is an eBay treasure trove you guys are sitting in, right?
We've got a lot of, like, semi-functional and unused audio equipment that I don't even.
Yeah, someone will want it.
Yep. There you go. Noah's already looking at it.
Noah, get yourself a postal scale. All you need is a postal scale so you know how much it'll actually cost to send, and boom, you're in business.
And so what do? Do you use like a mail.com or something like that, or whatever that is?
Actually, PayPal, if you get paid through PayPal, they'll let you put in the shipping information directly off the eBay auction, and it just charges right out of the money that they gave you to your PayPal account. So it's all really like one stop, basically. And I know some people have a problem with PayPal, but that's one of the benefits.
But then you have to go take it to the post office or something like that?
You just spit out a label out of your printer, and you can either have the postal guys pick it up, or sometimes I walk over to, there's a Staples with the postal counter right near my house, so I just, you know, collect them and I walk over there if I'm going that way.
There you go.
It's very convenient.
There you go. So, Matthew, what have you been doing for entertainment when you're not? Oh, I should just say, forgive me, Matthew, I want to give an update. David Dayan on Twitter 7 minutes ago said, Pelosi basically saying in code that the votes aren't there, intimating that Boehner should delay the vote. Wow.
Wow.
That's good news.
Good stuff.
That's good news.
Stuff.
Hopefully Boehner is too much of a...
crybaby?
Well, just too arrogant to not...
Right.
And then coincidentally, Dayan just retweeted Laura Ingraham saying a vote for Fast Track is a vote to pre-approve the secret trade deals. Global governance greater than congressional authority. I mean, there's some truth to that, but it's actually corporate governance Pelosi says it's there's a lot of activity here going on, it is what it is. So what have you been doing for entertainment? Forgive me, Matthew.
That's all right. Let's get back to what's important here. Forget that. Forget the way the world turns. Let's talk about TV and movies.
All right. Yeah, let's hear it. What are you watching these days? What are we going to
recommend?
You know, Tim,
I have, as I may have mentioned before, I have a very wide palette. I've seen everything from, you know, the latest Avengers movie and the Mad Max movies to some of the more esoteric and artistic films that I've shown in my classes. You know, I've also been doing this other podcast with some friends that we're just still getting together called Made Out of Mouth, where we pick three movies. And each of us, the three of us, talk about them, and they're all under a certain theme. And so the last one we actually did was relevant to the movie I'm going to suggest for you today. We wanted to look at movies that sort of presaged the reality TV and sort of YouTube culture of, you know, sort of real life repackaged into entertainment. And so we watched, for instance, Real Life, the Albert Brooks movie.
Are you kidding?
That was a
huge influence on Who's the Caboose?
I thought so. We also watched David Holzman's Diary. Have you ever seen that one? It's sort of about a guy making a sort of a first-person documentary, but it's like a parody, basically.
No, didn't see that.
No? Okay, that's a great one. It's the 16 millimeter, and it's about a guy sort of just trying to make sense of his life on camera, but he's sort of vapid and pretentious, and it's very funny. But the third one brings me to the movie that I actually wanted to recommend for you first, although I had another one that if you were going to be watching it with Myla, I had another one, but you can put a pin in that, and I'll come back to that. This is a movie called, it's actually a television movie from BBC in the 60s, and it is from 1968, and it is called The Year of the Sex Olympics. My friend Ryan Sarnowski, who's one of the co-hosts of the Made Out of Mouth podcast with me, recommended this. I hadn't seen it until a couple weeks ago, and it is extremely prescient about its take on what television is being used for in the modern era. And I guess this guy had written it as a reflection of what was starting to happen in the 60s, but it is uncanny how dead on in a lot of ways it is, even in its sort of low-budget, black-and-white TV set of the 60s sort of aesthetic, that it captures basically the intent of reality television in a political sense on its impact on the population. And it's highly entertaining, and it's really bizarre, too, because it is looks kind of like an old episode of Doctor Who in its sort of, you know, mise-en-scene and the way it's actually produced. But the content is very directly an outgrowth of British books like 1984 and Brave New World. So if you haven't seen this, it is on YouTube, actually, in pieces. It's not really ever gotten a proper release, but it is, I think, highly fascinating for anybody who's in the business that you and I are in.
The Year of the Sex Olympics.
Yeah, which the idea is in the future, society is divided between two groups of people, the low drives, which sort of equate with the labor class, and the high drives, who control the government and the media. And the low drives, and I just love that distinction too, the low drives and the high drives. The low drives are controlled by constant broadcasts of pornography that the high drives think will pacify them. But the movie sort of takes as its plot that one high drive believes that the media should be used to educate the low drives. And then after someone accidentally dies live on TV, one of the high drives decides to commission a new program called The Live Life Show, and where they take two high drive people and they strand them on a remote Scottish island while the low drive audience watches everything. You know, similar to like a Big Brother or a
Survivor
kind of thing. Yeah, exactly. And so they keep throwing things in to get stuff to happen. You know, like they send a psychotic murderer on there to live with them. And it's just hilarious. I mean, I've always been a huge fan of the sort of dystopian media narrative movies like, you know, Running Man and, you know, even
right.
the Hunger Games takes this as a kind of its point. But this one has got to be like the urtext of them all because it's, you know, 1968. The guy who wrote it, Nigel Neal, was known for a lot of British TV movies and stuff, but he also wrote the adaptation, the TV adaptation of 1984. So I think he had some of that in his mind at the time. And it's just hilarious because, you know, every year they have, or every 4 years they have something called the Sex Olympics. Now, you never actually see it on screen, and the sort of the sex is sort of very tastefully represented. Again, it's 1968, but the content and the humor and the insights of this movie are have to be seen to be believed, really.
Fantastic. That sounds great.
Yeah, this movie was also a big influence on guys in this throughout the 60s. Like, you'll hear people from Monty Python and the Beatles and Pink Floyd reference, especially Nigel Neal, who also wrote the Quatermass, Alan Quatermass series, that's sort of like an adventure series, say that it had an impact on them. But, yeah, it's really worth seeing, and it really is too dead on. I mean, one of its big themes is that the population is going to blow out of control, and so they put a lot of porn on TV to keep people from actually having real sex. And I know there's been a lot of talk about the sort of effect that widespread pornography is having on our population. I don't think I've really ever heard anybody talk about what it might actually do to population control, but that may actually be one of its unforeseen circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me it could go both ways, though, right? I don't know.
If you're watching porn and then it makes you want to have real sex, I really don't think that's a side effect. I think it's more like you've been hearing all these articles in men's magazines about, like, oh, porn ruined my drive and I can't have sex with a real person now. And, you know,
would
it's always
that
voice. Would
you do that impression more, please?
Yeah.
I like that.
That's my character, watches too much porn, man.
watches too much porn libertarian man or something. Put a
well, isn't that also watches well, no, too that... much? Yeah, and then also goes and cries about it to Maxim magazine or whatever. Is Maxim still around? I don't even know.
Yeah, actually, Sam, if you look at the numbers, the pornography industry is a liberal conspiracy that takes the semen of cultural significance. Okay, sorry. I was doing my global warming skeptic. I've been meaning to do it.
Oh, there you go. Boom.
Wow.
You see that I argue successfully, and your face is greasy. Bye.
Oh, that was another dude.
That was a different guy, to be fair.
That guy was belligerent. All right.
I just had to throw all my critiques of your callers in one fell swoop.
I should also add that another film, as long as we're talking about these types of movies, one that I really enjoyed was Man Bites Dog. Do you remember that one?
Yes. Oh, huge. I had that poster in my dorm in college. That was like had a big effect on me. You know, repeat viewings show it to be a little sillier than I remembered it being when it first came out. But
a little sillier?
Yeah, it's hilarious. A little sillier, yeah. You know, but it's the way it can suck you in, think you're watching one thing, and then it turns into something else, is one of the best to ever do that. You know, sort of Taxi Driver has that, where you're sort of identifying with the characters. Then they do something so horrific that you're like, oh, my God, I can't believe I was sort of on this guy's side, you know, feeling sympathetic. So that's one of the best to ever do it. And it really is about how, you know, people film things and get involved in them, and it sort of numbs them to what they're filming.
There was also, I remember at that time, too, because, you know, by 91 or 92, I think it was around that time, I had done The Comedy Lab, which was the sort of the first of those sort of faux verite things. It was supposed to be sort of like an industrial or a demo tape that goes awry. Because I can't get anybody in the group to actually show up to any of the meetings where we're going to promote the show. But
was that one of your MTV shorts?
No, this was something different.
Okay.
There was a guy who did, I think it was a show called Newsroom. He was coming out of Finkelstein or something like that from Canada. Mm. And he did a 6-part miniseries called like Married Life or something, or it was ostensibly a reality show about a newly married couple. It was a Canadian show. I can't remember.
I didn't know that one.
And it was funny because the whole thing falls apart. I mean, he basically caused the marriage to fall apart. It was worth watching. But Matthew Film Guy, the movie this week is The Year of the Sex Olympics. You can see it on YouTube. Matthew Film Guy, always a pleasure.
Did you not want to hear what my Mila-friendly pick was?
Okay.
No, that's all right.
No, make it quick.
Nah, that's just... Okay, well, I want to know if you've seen it. Have you and Mila ever watched Matilda, the Danny DeVito film?
Have we ever watched Matilda? Okay,
then... Said.
We watched Matilda.
How many times? Okay.
I don't know, a couple of times. But that was like 2 years ago, buddy.
Okay. Well, I just
we're
had
on
the pleasure
Fletch
to recently
3.
See it.
We're on Fletch Lives right now. We've been watching. Yeah.
Oh, really? So you are showing your the 80s Saturday Night Live comedies.
Yeah. Yeah. We're moving
That's
into
great.
That. Yep. Yep. I think Wayne's World is coming up soon, and Coming to America, Trading
God of,
Places.
God of show Coming to America,
Trading Places, I don't think is actually that inappropriate.
You know, I got to tell you something. No. Mary just had a short film of hers show at a film festival that her old film school put on, and one of the guys giving out the awards was the DP from Coming to America, this old Jewish dude, and I felt like that was as close to greatness as I may have ever come.
Wow.
Indeed.
There you have it. Words to live by from Matthew Film Guy, ladies and gentlemen. Matthew, always
also words to live by. Check out my eBay auctions.
Yes, check out Matthew's. We'll put a link to your eBay auctions, and so you can get a piece of history, ladies and gentlemen. Matthew Film Guy, thank you so much.
Thanks, Sam. Take care.
Bye bye. Let's see. How do I? So that phone system worked.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It was pretty good.
You know what? I'm gonna let's do this. 06.
Oh, we got to go into the better half.
Let's do that now.
We'll see you on Monday. It'll be Matt and Mike Monday. What are you looking at me like that for? But I think we may not have a, it may be just members only on Monday. We'll see. We got to talk about that. All right. We will, but at the very least, definitely be here on Tuesday. You can be a part of this program by calling 646-257-3920 is the number. And you can IM us via the app at majorityapp.com. Pick up the app. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. They have free shipping now. Get the Majority Report blend, ladies and gentlemen. If you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our link at MajorityReportKickback.com. We get a kickback. You notice no difference whatsoever. And you can get all that information on our support our sponsor page. Remember, just a couple more days on that Credo deal, credomobile.com/majority report. We're going to continue the coverage of the potential TAA vote in the better half. Maybe we'll even do an alert on that vote when it comes out. All right. See you folks later.